NHS for Life show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, host for the show and founder of Yes to Life, the UK charity that advocates for integrative cancer care, an approach that recognises the very many needs of those diagnosed with cancer that extend well beyond dealing with the physical manifestations of the disease. My guest this week is someone who I've somehow managed to miss up until recently, but who's been doing incredible work supporting people with cancer. Shelley Clark has her own bombshell story of a truly spectacular remission, and the insights gained from this have provided fertile ground for her work, coaching and supporting others. Hi Shelley, I am so delighted to have you on the show.
I'm excited to be here, Robin.
So I've got to say, you were an absolute star at our recent online conference, Reclaiming Our True Nature. In fact, your session was so great that I'll be encouraging listeners at the end of the show to consider getting a copy from the Yes to Life online store. So a key part of your talk at the conference was actually just sharing your own incredible story. And it's so amazing. I'm going to ask you to tell it again now, if you wouldn't mind. Is that okay?
Yeah, of course. Okay, so my cancer journey started in 2019. I had noticed that a lot of lumps were appearing over my body and decided to go to the doctor eventually. And that led to my whole world being blown apart overnight. I was sent for emergency scans, CT scans, and I was diagnosed with metastatic malignant melanoma, which is skin cancer. By the time I was diagnosed, the cancer had spread from my skin to my lymph nodes. Those were the lumps that were protruding outside of my body. Multiple, some of these lumps, these lymph nodes were like the size of plums, and it was significantly painful at that point. It was clearly something was going wrong very fast. But it had also spread to my ovaries, my adrenal glands, my chest wall, my soft tissue, both lungs. And after an emergency brain scan, I was told that I had brain cancer too. Given the significance of the spread and how aggressive the cancer seemed to be growing, I was given less than 6 months to live.
I bet, yeah.
Yeah. 6 months was very optimistic because the significant spread of the cancer. And if I responded to end-of-life immunotherapy, I wasn't able to have any targeted therapy because of a gene mutation. So the good news was just piling on at that point. So the 6 months was if I responded to immunotherapy and it supported me in a little way. That was the diagnosis. And my oncologist was incredible, actually, very firm but fair, and did say that the brain cancer was likely to take me first, and because there were so many tumors in the brain, that he suggested that I went home. And I'm a mother of two beautiful boys. Always the hardest part to talk about, this bit. But to talk to them and tell them everything that I ever wanted them to hear from me, because I'm probably not going to wake up knowing who I am or recognize them at some point in this journey. That was what I was left with. And then I was told to go home.
Just to be clear, the brain cancer was a separate cancer to the melanoma.
Secondary, yes. Right. All of it was secondary. But I think the brain cancer was so significant that it was going to be the secondary cancer there that was going to take me before the skin cancer did. And I don't know what you do with that kind of information. I don't think that any human is equipped with just the tools, if you like, to go home and have to pretend that you're okay after a diagnosis like that. In fact, I think any diagnosis, I think we can forget that we're handed so much information, and a prognosis and statistics, and then expected to go home and do what with that, you know, carry on. Yeah.
Yeah, certainly no provision, is there? I mean, it's like, in most cases, it's the worst shock that will have occurred to anybody in their life.
Yeah.
And yet there's sort of like, there you are, there it is, off you go.
We're tapping into existential terror here.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, and just the idea of, okay, wait a minute, I walked in at Shelley and I've walked out being told that I have a certain amount of weeks to months to live. And there's nothing anybody could do. And that came from the medical system, but also that came from Dr. Google, which, you know, we do that. Statistics, I couldn't find anybody that had healed from the cancer that I had and the spread that I had. And so the world really was telling me over and over again, healing wasn't possible. And, you know, we have to try and survive in that.
Mm. So the big anomaly in your story is the fact you're still here, looking horribly healthy.
Yes, I'm going to take that compliment.
I mean, you know, amazing, because, you know, by anybody's standards, that was seemed to be a direct pointer towards a swift death. So, you know, if someone just asked you, like, well, how did you do it? How did you manage to reverse this kind of runaway train of cancer so as to be alive and well here now? And what would you say to them?
So the first thing I would say is the prognosis does not need to be your truth. It's information, yes, but there's a danger in letting that become your truth, because you almost expect it to happen. And so what I decided to do was, once, of course, the overwhelm, the fear, the meltdowns, the panic, the desperation, everything that comes with a cancer diagnosis, and it's significant. Once that set in, of course it did.
Of course.
And I had my first panic attack. I was up until 2 o'clock in the morning, doom scrolling and trying to find answers. I spent too long in the shower because that's where I could cry without my family knowing. I hid a lot. So I had all of that going on. But underneath it all, there was a curiosity or a desperation to live. And so I chose to believe that healing for me could happen. And my why became very, very strong. I needed to survive for my children. Mm-hmm. And a byproduct of that was me realizing that I'm worth it. I matter. And so why shouldn't I try? Why can't I achieve a radical remission? Why couldn't that be for me? And that led me towards the path that I went on to create this healing environment, and that my body responded in and healed against all the medical odds.
Against all the odds. Yeah, incredible. And but that's such an interesting thing to point to, is that literally the decision of yours to go for it. And to open to a possibility that everybody else said wasn't there, that was the key point. You're telling me that was the key point that leads to you being here today talking to me.
I believe so. I believe that we all matter, right? So we forget that. If I think about my life before cancer, and we'll probably speak about this a bit more in a bit too. My life looked very much like showing up for everybody else, putting everybody else's needs first, chronically stressed, chronically worrying, emotionally unwell. I didn't know that I mattered, Robin. I didn't know that I was loved. I didn't know that I wasn't alone. So when this happened, I think what's important is to understand that you do matter, and that don't abandon yourself in these moments, because this is when you need yourself the most. And so I do believe that a why is key to, okay, my why is strong. I'm going to believe that I could heal. Now I need to figure out how.
See what that means. Yeah. Fascinating. Yeah, just amazing that, to me, the power of that decision. And clearly you pointed there to purpose and meaning. This part is also very important, which not everybody feels. But I think, you know, I often talk about the kind of silver lining of this horrible thing called cancer, which is that you're just stopped dead in your tracks. And maybe for the first time for years, you're actually present. Because, you know, literally your future has just been axed, which you might have been completely preoccupied with what you were trying to make, you know, get to. And, you know, it'll be all right when, all that stuff has all been just binned. And so you're present and you get a chance to reevaluate some of the things you just spoken about.
Yeah.
Whether you're worth it, which a lot of people are not even thinking about. They're just on the treadmill doing all the stuff you described. And they don't get a chance to ever find that out. And, of course, finding out things like that is gold dust in terms of a life, actually, isn't it? Yeah. It can turn your life around.
Yeah, it really can. And I think I remember feeling this, that if I'm going to die, I'm going to die trying to live.
Right.
And we're all worth that. You know, we can get really, really caught up in, I have cancer, which is incredibly painful to go through, and on so many levels, emotionally, spiritually, mentally, and physically, all of it. So we can get lost in that. And also we can get really lost in, how do I heal? Doing the healing, you know, what do I do? So I need to do all of the things. And actually the energy underneath what we do really matters. So for my energy, it was, I'm going to try and live and I'm going to try and support my body. I knew really that I needed to move out of fear. I mean, I'm in it, you know, it coexisted with my healing. So, you know, I love to talk about that, but I knew I needed to move out of all of that and the pressures and the panic around a cancer diagnosis, and instead turn my focus towards how the energy behind what I was doing, but also how do I support my body? Because I knew that before my cancer diagnosis, I had lost my self-worth, my self-love, my self-care, my purpose, my place in this world. I was very isolated and alone in everything that was going on. So when we talk about, and we know now, and science proves this, that our bodies respond to environment over time, I knew I needed to change that environment in order for my body to hopefully respond in a different way.
Yeah, interesting. So what you're pointing to is, it would be quite easy in a way to meet cancer with exactly the same kind of energy as you're already dealing with life, which is rather badly. So,
but you're spot on. You're 100% exactly that, Robin. Before cancer, I was living highly stressed and chronically suppressed and alone and detached. And so in a way, when I understood that that affects our bodies, my cancer diagnosis almost made a little bit of sense. I didn't know what I know today. So I didn't know that really it was the overlooked root causes for my personal diagnosis. But you're spot on, because I needed to move my body out of that energy and into a different environment, a different way of doing things. And here it's good to be reminded, I didn't have the time to try all of the things.
Right.
And I also didn't have a medical system that was telling me, oh, we have help for you. So it was me. And I had to figure that out. And in many ways, it might sound odd, but I think that may have helped me, because I wasn't having to try all of the diets, all of the supplements, all of the protocols, and then hope that the next treatment would heal me.
Yeah.
I was already told I had a limited time and no treatment options. So I think in a way that kind of helped remove all of the pressure and panic that can be created by a cancer diagnosis.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Well, the you know, one of the things that the sort of the not so great things about the access we have to information and resources these days, you spoke about a lot, and you do speak about, which is the kind of the overwhelm that goes with it. You know, yeah. There are just too many things out there. You used a phrase there which some people might have never heard of before, doom scrolling, but that's something that people who've had cancer know what it is as soon as you say it. And it's just looking and looking and looking. I've been there, you know. And this overwhelm thing is major, isn't it? And it's very heartening to hear somebody like you say, well, yes, of course, you need to get your ducks in a row. You're going to do something. Yeah, of course, it's not about doing nothing and sitting back and hoping for the best. Mm-hmm. But in another way, you're also leaving room for something else to come in, which is completely different to all of that. It's underneath, I would say, all of that. And we tried to encapsulate it in the name of our conference, Reclaiming Our True Nature, which is, I think, exactly what you're talking about for yourself. You actually found yourself.
Yeah.
In order to start off from a real place rather than from a pretend place of panic and terror and all the rest of it.
Yeah. And I didn't do anything perfectly either. So and I think that's important, because now I've helped hundreds of people now going through their own diagnosis. And I see it all the time where we feel like we have to follow a certain diet, a certain supplement protocol, a certain red light therapy with a sauna protocol and mistletoe therapy. And then and all of that stuff. And actually what our bodies respond to, which I now know, and science is now supporting this, what our body responds to more than anything is the energy underneath it all, which is why one person can follow a anti-cancer diet and another person can follow it, and one will see great results and another person won't. Well, the energy is different. You know, if we're going into these things in panic and pressure and feeling restrictive, then the body has to respond to that first. And it's key, I think, that we start understanding that, because diets and supplements and other modalities can be very supportive for the body, but only if the body feels supported by you, right?
People quite often sum that up quite well in the difference between trying not to die or trying to live as well as you can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Completely different starting
completely
place.
Yeah. And so what I even ended up doing is I ended up reframing for myself any treatment that I was having. So there was a big seminar about my side effects that I was going to have. So it was 2 hours long, and everyone in the room was just filled with dread about the side effects. And even things like that, we overlook these things. It's really important that we can reframe that for ourselves, because our bodies respond to our beliefs, our expectations, our thoughts, how safe we feel. That's really what's running the show. It's not necessarily the thing that we do. It's the energy underneath the thing that we do. So for me, reframing the medical system helped me feel safer in my body, in my nervous system, but also very empowered. So the medical system became a source of information and support instead of my truth that, you know, my end. I reframed it. So every time I went to visit my oncologist, I had a conversation with him that we only talk about healing. And he supported that and it helped. So I stopped dreading my appointments. Yeah.
Yeah.
Same with treatment too. You know, I started really prepping my body for my medicine instead of, I'm bracing against treatment and side effects. And, you know, the nocebo effect comes in here, but
absolutely.
Yeah. So I did a lot of those things and I refocused entirely on those things and supporting my body that way.
Mm. So you said an interesting thing there. You spoke about belief. Okay. So belief sort of has lots of connotations around it about, you know, religious things and all that sort of thing. But it's interesting to note that the fact that we all believe something. In fact, we have our beliefs, whether we think we do or not. And, you know, and what our beliefs are, actually, as you said, they do actually affect how we approach life, how we respond to life, and how our life goes as a result.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's very good to actually realize that's the case. So, and if that's the case, well, why would you want to have a belief that you're going to die?
Yeah.
It's not such a good thing to have, is it?
Right.
And, of course, one of the things that came up in the conference, Bobby Searer gave a talk, a great talk also, one of many fantastic talks we had, where he used the language of the horizontal and the vertical, which caught on, and other people for the rest of the conference were talking about it in those terms. It was useful, I think, a useful way to speak about things. And, you know, he spoke about the horizontal as in terms of, if you like, our knowledge and all that area of life, the time-based, knowledge-filled world of human beings. And he said, well, that stuff's all very important and all the rest of it, and we don't ignore it because that is who we are. We're human beings. That is, you know, a big part of who we are, in that we learn stuff, we work stuff out, and we decide on steps to take for a future result. That's kind of being human. But it's not the whole story.
Right.
And he talked about the vertical, which, of course, cuts right across that, and is in actual fact, is the part of life which is for real, is present. It's not just a bunch of ideas we pass around of what might happen. Right. It's actually what's happening.
Yeah.
And that's the place in which our true nature exists. Mm. And that's the place in which we are actually responding to life in real time. And that's the place in which our beliefs can have a big effect.
Yeah.
You know, imagine if you believe the horizontal is everything.
Yeah.
Right? Then you're in the hands of the doctors, because they're certainly working pretty much in the horizontal. Absolutely. With all their science and facts and everything else.
Yeah.
And then you come along and you actually blow that whole lot out of the water, right?
Mm-hmm.
They said that was all true. The computer said so, but you're still here.
Yes.
You know, so then where did that come from? Well, it came from the vertical.
Yes.
Your true nature, your beliefs, your intentions, your response to your life.
And yes. So our bodies are experiencing all of our lives. You know, we not just what we intellectualize. In fact, that can keep us stuck in our mind, and that actually that can keep us that can hinder us sometimes, because we think that we know, and so we're doing the learning and we're doing the this and we're reading the books and but the embodiment of it is totally different. And so our bodies are always responding and adapting to the experience that we live in. And for so long, we have thought that we find that in books and in education and in statistics and in, you know, like diagnosis is like mine and the prognosis has to be this. But actually, our bodies they respond to the life experience. And that involves how we look after ourselves, what we believe about ourselves, what we believe about the world, how safe we feel in it. And it goes on to how supported we feel, how heard we feel, all of it. And once I started understanding that part, again, when I look at my life before cancer, I can totally see how my human body, my physical self, was really struggling in the life that I was trying to survive in. I could intellectualize that, but I had to embody the change, you know, and we're tapping into the vertical, you know, that, as you were saying, it's bringing all of the other stuff in, because actually the human body responds to that more than it responds to intellectualizing.
Interesting. Yes. Fascinating stuff. And I've been thinking a lot and speaking about the concept of, okay, we've got belief. Okay, that's one thing that has a lot of spiritual connotations. We can go one step further. You can talk about miracles, right? So you are actually a walking miracle, right? Nobody has a really good, concrete, textbook, thought out, logistical reason why you're still alive. There isn't one, all right? Okay. Your survival stands outside of the normal time-based logic that so much of medicine yes. exists in and so many people live in, and you probably lived in before you had cancer.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. But the thing that changed, I suggest, is that by allowing the possibility that something extraordinary could happen to you, which is not in the textbooks, and you couldn't even find it out with Mr. Google, all right? It was completely absent. You had a leap of faith. And that, well, you can't create a miracle. I don't think anybody can say they can create a miracle. But we can suppress a miracle, pretend it didn't happen. I mean, you know, if you look at what doctors have done with remarkable recoveries for the last few hundred years, put them in the bottom drawer, lock them away. We don't want to know about that. They didn't really happen. That's what you can do. You can just ignore people like you who flout all the rules and just carry on as if it didn't happen. We can do that. But actually, a part of allowing a miracle to happen in the terms that it changes our life is just that, is making room for it as a possibility.
I honestly, that's what I was looking for when I was diagnosed. I want to make it clear that I also experienced the existential terror, the desperation, the heartbreak I was living in. It was physical. I can't put to words the pain of what I thought was coming. But also there was another side of me that was curious to find out if, who says
right,
who says this, you know, I'm at the moment I'm walking and talking, and I feel you know, very, very unwell, but who made this up, that I'm going to definitely die in this amount of time? And call it desperation, sheer panic, whatever, but it set me on this path of, if I could find one miracle story, then why not me? Then it's proven to me that it can happen. I did need that proof, I must say. But I found it. There's radical remissions happening all over the world. ECAPs in the UK here, you know. And I was led to something called the Heal documentary, which there's a Dr. Kelly, can't quite remember her surname, she's the radical remission one, and there's another one, who created the Heal documentary, and it featured Dr. Kelly Turner in it. And there it was, this whole list of people that had achieved healing against the odds. And what were they doing? So I'm going to do that. And that's the decision I made, that that I'm going to, but not just do them out of desperation and panic. For me, I needed to understand the why behind it. It's the way that my brain is. So, and once I understood that emotions matter, the energy of what I'm doing matters. I'm just going to give you an example here. Let's just say with meditation, there's this big push out here right now that if you do certain meditations, then they heal your body. Well, I personally are working with people that are doing these meditations and nothing is happening for them. Well, the reason is, it's not the meditation per se. Right. You know, I'm not denying that mystical, magical things happen inside meditations, and I've experienced those myself, but it's not that. It's the energy behind it. If we're going into a meditation frightened, scared, and pressure and panic, and I must do this and I can't stand meditation, your body's responding to that. The meditation just won't hit the spot. But for somebody that is regulated and surrendering to the practice and enjoying it and believing that it has some sort of effect over their healing, the body responds to safety, to calmness, to regulation. And it's there where the immune system and our bodies are so smart, can do what it can do. And so that's the focus that I went on, not so much the things, but the energy behind the things.
How you do it. Yeah, absolutely right. Yeah.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. Radio. The station. station that makes you feel good.
That's it. And you mentioned, of course, Kelly Turner there and the Radical Remission Project. Personally, I think we owe a fantastic amount to her for tackling that project, because before then, of course, people had spontaneous remissions, but the ones you ever heard about, they were just one in a million. Mm-hmm. And it was so wild and wacky. It was just like, okay, you know, who knows what happened there. And also, it was very inaccessible information. You know, it didn't get that far and wide generally. But now we're surrounded by people having radical remissions. I mean, certainly, Yes to Life is almost an ordinary story, which is like, well, wait a minute. If normal, you know, it's becoming normal to have a radical remission. It's not so radical. It's just pure common sense. It's very exciting. And I think what you said, that thing, you actually just knowing there's somebody else who's already done this is a huge thing, isn't it?
But I needed hope. Robin, I needed hope.
Yeah.
You know,
that's where it comes from. And so knowing there are thousands of people who've done it, well, even better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why not me? Why can't I be next?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, yeah, she did us a fantastic service to pay attention to something that people have been ignoring forever.
Yeah.
It's kind of an obvious step that nobody was prepared to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, we've only got a little while left. I want to start talking a bit about what you've been doing since you got well, because you've got a bee under your bonnet about, like, I've got something to share here. Come on, tell me what you've been doing and what you've been finding.
Okay, yeah, sure. So once my body was starting to heal, and once I realised, especially in my oncologist team, that it was certainly not expected, and they used the word miracle a few times, it became really clear to me that in the world we are leading people towards things that are supportive, so like diets that can support healing, like supplements, like modalities, but actually what's missing is the understanding of how the human body responds and the importance of the living in fear and panic and overwhelm as to living in empowerment and calmness. And so I've spent the last few years really researching and learning about the chronic impact of emotional stress, stress in general, the belief systems, how supported we feel, whether we're connected or we feel alone, the importance of our mission or our purpose in life, and really bringing that together, because I realized what I had done was, by using that wisdom, I had created a healing environment that my body over time responds to. My body responded over time to a different sort of environment, one filled with self-abandonment and stress and worry and emotional suppression. So I could see why my body had become vulnerable. And therefore, cancer had grown and had found a environment to thrive in. So I was really keen to learn about how to create a healing environment so that I could not only help others, but so that I can keep myself safe. So that's what I do now. I deliver masterclasses each week inside the healing room, which is something that I offer. And also I work one-to-one with people to help them identify not only the environment that they've come from and why the body may have fallen vulnerable, but more importantly, what do we do with that now? We don't want to create more overwhelm and pressure now that we've diagnosed with cancer. The other thing I'm really keen to bring to light is the fact that the cancer diagnosis itself comes with so much emotional stress and chronic stress and worry that we need to feel held and supported in those moments and understood. And how to truly support the body. That doesn't look like, sadly, it doesn't look like just trying a diet or just trying a a modality, and I can understand why we do that. You know, me too. At the beginning, I bought all the things, the masticating juicer and all the carrots and everything.
Yeah.
And then I realized that underneath all of that was the feeling of panic, stress. I feared food. I felt restricted. I felt overwhelmed, and I was starting to put together, no, my body would like to feel supported, to feel nourished, to feel cared for. I realized I needed to reach out for help, say no, put boundaries in, you know, nourish my body in a different way. So yeah, that's what I've been focusing on over the last few years, is really helping people understand not so much what to do, but how to do the things to support healing.
Mm, fascinating. Yeah, it's been a journey. You know, I've been doing what I'm doing for 20 years. And back then, yeah, there was kind of lip service given to the whole arena of the kind of mind and spirit and all the rest of it. And there was, you know, the body-mind science was beginning to emerge and everything. But it was definitely, at the end of the list, it was a kind of add-on, you know, like you do all the juice thing, and then, of course, you ought to pay attention to da-da-da-da. You know, it was down there somewhere. But for myself, I've come to the same view as you. It's come round, and I've come to see it as underpinning everything else. It's foundational. That it's the basis on which any of the other things are likely to help you or not, really. You know, they all rest on that. And interestingly enough, the opportunity of cancer is to actually find out all this stuff, you know, because as I said before, you get stopped in your tracks. And you can, if you're prepared to be curious in amongst all the terror and all the rest of it, which is not easy, but just to have a look and just reevaluate, well, bloody hell, what have I been up to? What does actually matter to me in life? But that's the one thing about a bit of death around, whether it's relating to yourself or somebody you care about, is suddenly your priorities change. You know, you suddenly see them crystal clear. Oh, that thing I put so much energy in, it doesn't matter at all. Get it down the list. This is what matters.
Yeah.
And you can reprioritize your life very quickly if you want to. And so it does take willingness to do it. And I'm not saying it's easy, but it's definitely inherent in the whole thing of a cancer diagnosis. Why? Well, I think a lot of it is because of the sort of the myth behind cancer, that it's equals death, you know, which clearly you just proved it doesn't. But it does in society. Cancer equals death. Mm. Even when somebody gets a relatively minor diagnosis, they fear death. Because of the way it's been billed for years and years. Yeah. And that, I say, is the kind of silver lining, that we get the chance to reevaluate our lives and change some things which have real meaning.
Yeah, I mean, and when you talk about statistics, which I'll just briefly speak about, it actually makes sense that statistics have panned out that way, because we don't understand, or we haven't understood, not no blame, no shame, just the way that it is. We haven't understood actually what our bodies respond to. Now we do. Now we do understand that our bodies are constantly responding and adapting to its environment. And if an environment stays consistent, the body will, by its sheer design, will respond and adapt to it. It's literally how we're designed. Yeah. And so it makes sense that when we're diagnosed with cancer in the past, that it did lead to what the statistics show us, because we didn't know that we need to change environment. We didn't know that. Now we do. Now so much new science is supporting that and teaching us a new way of understanding our bodies, where we're finally putting at the forefront the mind-body connection, but more than that, the emotional body connection, the spiritual body connection. Those three things are actually what our physical body is constantly adapting and responding to. And so now statistics can change, because if we look at, for me, again, the diagnosis, how I was living before, and I must say, of hundreds of people that I've helped now, not one person can say that they weren't living yet in a unhelpful environment beforehand. Now we know we can change that environment. How do we do that? By taking how we feel, what we think, what we believe, how connected we are, very seriously. Mm. And when we do that, which is what I did, the body can respond and it becomes not a miracle anymore. It becomes almost, it's how we're designed. It's our blueprint.
Yes, I absolutely agree. Yeah. And it's fascinating that science is catching up with this stuff finally.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of the heartening things, if you like, about left brain or horizontal pursuits is that if you push them far enough, eventually you get to a place where you realize, well, they don't really work here anymore. You know, they bump into the infinite at some point in some form or another. And it's like, oh, right, what now? And you realize that there is something more. And in terms of genetic science now, marvellous, we've gone way down the road with genetic science and is showing us now that the mind-body connection is true.
Yeah.
All right, you can see it.
Exactly, and not just true. It's we need to take it, which is where my work, that's where I focus on with helping and understanding the healing in general. It's not just true. It's the foundation that all the other building blocks are built on. So again, you know, if anyone listening is sitting thinking, oh, I've tried all the things and nothing is helping, it could very well be. It's not your fault. It's not a you thing. It's the energy underneath everything, because the body has to respond to you first. Mm. And then anything else can be supportive and a bonus, but it's really understanding yourself as an environment first, which for me led me to healing.
Well, you know, this is what leads a lot of people to talk about the opportunity of cancer and the fact that they would never go back to who they were before. Why? Because they've changed their life radically. And you know, you've spoken about working with hundreds of people who would all say their life was pretty bad before, whatever that, however cheerfully they were partaking in it, it was actually very bad for them.
Yes.
Funnily enough, it's not just people with cancer. That's the human condition, basically. Mm-hmm. We're all living in that way where we don't feel we're worth it. We, you know, self-love is talked about. It's like that's out the window, doesn't exist, really. We haven't really identified what we're here for, what we're supposed to be doing. And, you know, all these things compound into a life which is driven by shoulds. And, you know, we're just doing what we think we have to do. Until suddenly we have an opportunity to stop and just question that. Even the people who haven't had that yet, or, you know, nothing disastrous has happened to them, they're in the same boat largely, most people. And so in a certain way, it really is an opportunity to be taken. And if we can come out of it healthy at the other end as well, well, even better. So
I love the word you used just then, is surviving. It's true. We actually have a survival mode.
Right.
Our bodies, we have one. And so when that's ignited for way longer than it should be, all parts of our bodies take the hit, including the immune system, the incredible system that can swipe out all the abnormal cells all the time, as long as we understand how to keep ourselves healthy. And that does... that can look like the obvious, but more importantly, I think what is coming to light more and more, which is definitely my passion, is emotional wellness, is feeling that you matter and feeling supported and safe. I do see it a lot before a diagnosis. It's not just obvious stress, Robin. It's also feeling lonely, chronically lonely.
You know, connection, hugely important. Wow, we're out of time. We could talk for hours, I think.
We could.
Anyway, that was a great point to end on there, so that's good. Wonderful. I think the work you're doing is fantastic. I think your story is mind-blowing. I love it. And thank you for what you're doing and inspiring other people to make the impossible possible, maybe. Great stuff. Thank you so much for talking today.
Thank you for having me.
Bye.
See you. Bye. Bye.
I'm so excited to have come across Shirley. Her talk at our recent online conference was a highlight of an incredible day. She has so much to offer, and I'll be looking for other ways to collaborate with her going forward. Take a look at Shelley's website to find out more about her and her work. It's at catchmeifyoucancer.com. Catchmeifyoucancer.com. Also, I mentioned the recording of her amazing talk at our online conference. This, along with all the other talks from the day, is available from the Yes to Life online store, which you can find right at the very top of the homepage of yestolife.org.uk. And talking of conferences, we have our in-person conference ahead on the 26th of September in central London. The topic's the same one that went down so well online, reclaiming our true nature, and the speakers are some of the very best. Dr. Nature Winters, Dr. Leo Prunboom, Dr. David Hamilton, James Maskell, and more. If you want to see the full program, go to conference.yestolife.org.uk, where you can also book yourself a place. It's great to have so many of you listening each week and enjoying listening to wonderful guests such as Shelley. Thank you all for aligning your interests and ours at Yes to Life. It means a lot. I'm going to have another show ready for you next week, so I hope you'll make a point of joining me again for the next Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.